Hey everybody, just a quick word before we start this week's episode. Did you know that we have t-shirts and posters available for you, the listener of the Air Raid podcast? You didn't? Well, if you go to your email and email me, Aaron, at air-raid.net, and tell me what size shirt you want, and if you want a poster, that would be great too. We'll send you one so you can wear it on your body or hang it on your wall. Whatever you do with posters and t-shirts. T-shirts are $15 plus shipping and handling, and they're just great. They've got this like cowboy riding a bomb. It's like Slim Pickens, right? It's fantastic. You're really gonna like it. And then you can walk around town with your favorite podcast t-shirt on, and people say, "Hey, what is that?" And you say, "None of your business. Go get your own." And then they'll buy one. That's how these things work. Well, hello and welcome, everyone.
Okay.
Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast.
Deal breaker.
This is episode 113.
Woo!
What is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series.
It's not an accident at all.
I am your host, Aaron Roden.
And you have sexually transmitted crazy mouth.
And this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. And we've got a great show planned for you this week. Mr. Damian Jurado. Singer-songwriter from here in Seattle will be joining us shortly to talk about his life, how he got started in the music business, which is a pretty interesting story, and I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. The conversation gets a little serious. It does. It's a little serious, and but you know, nonetheless, I had a lot of fun talking with Damian here in Dining Room Studios. Once again, beautiful weather here in Seattle. It's been awesome. And it's been an awesome weekend. I hope the weekend treated all of you well. I went out to a bachelor party, if you can really call it that. How about a dude camping trip, complete with river rafting or river floating, and some fishing and lots of eating and drinking. And I gotta say, I'm very sore. I'm real, real sore, guys. Like my back, I might need a back transplant. Do they do that in some weird, seedy Russian basement somewhere for like $5,000? I can just pay $5,000 to some guy with only one eye and a peg leg, and maybe a big scar across his face, and he can give me a new spinal column. You know what I'm going to have to start doing is after these binge trips, which is what I'm referring to them to now, after these binge trips, I'm just going to have to stretch. I'm just going to, you know, maybe stretch before and after I go on a trip like this, because I'm hurting, guys. I'm really hurting. It's bad. I don't know if whether it's like once you hit your 30s, things start going downhill, or maybe it's just because... There was a fallen down tree, and we used it as a kind of a mechanical bull late Saturday night, and I fell off. I pretty much fell off this thing straight onto my neck, and I'm paying the price for it. Maraid was nice enough to kind of give me a little bit of a back rub last night when I got home, and she noticed that I have, a bit of a bruise, the size of a small turkey on my back. So anyway, I hope you guys did a little bit better than I did, this weekend. Because yeah, like I said, here in Seattle, the sun is out, man. And it is beaming down. It's getting hot. It's wonderful. For some reason, I don't know. What can this be considered? Is this global warming? Are we seeing it right now? This must be it, right? Because we've had, let's see, tail end of August and now into September, we haven't had much of any rain. And it's just been beautiful weather, like 70s and 80s the whole way. This is pretty cool. It's the 17th. of September. It should be raining. It should be raining and cold here in Seattle. And I'm kind of actually missing it a little bit. I want the fall. I really love the fall here in Washington. I like how the leaves start changing colors and things start falling. It gets a little bit colder out. You know, you can start to see your breath in the morning. I like that. I really, really enjoy it. And I'm hoping that we see that sometime soon, because I would like it to get a little bit chillier. Not a big hot guy. Although we are planning a trip. We've got a trip planned in October. We're actually going to Hawaii with some friends of ours. And I can do the hot and the humid when I'm on vacation. I can do that. Just not when I'm just, here at home. Anyway, not too much to start off here, guys. The things that we want to check this off the list. Let's do this again. A little plug for our iTunes. We know that a lot of you guys get this show from iTunes, and we would really appreciate it if you could go over there and give us a little review, send us some love, or just a star rating. It'll literally takes you about 5 seconds if you're signed up on iTunes already, just to just to rate us. Rate the show. We're at 92 right now. We're trying to surpass 100. Okay, that's the goal. That's still the goal, guys. So please, like before, I'm down on one knee. Go to the iTunes page, rate and review the show. It really does help us out in the long run. Also, new things here. If you go to our website, www.air-raid.net, go to the merch tab. We've got the new PayPal thing set up, and so hopefully that's all in working order, and you can order T-shirts and posters from there, and it helps support this little show we've got going. It does take money to run this thing, and we haven't asked you for much out there, guys, but small price to get an awesome shirt. It's this really cool silhouette of a cowboy riding a bomb, riding an H-bomb, kind of reminiscent of Slim Pickens from the movie, what is it, Dr. Strangelove? Yeah, anyway. We didn't steal it, though. It's not trademarked. It's a cool design, though. So go to the website and check out the T-shirt, and buy one if you feel so inclined. But that $15 does go to a good spot. Goes to me. In helping run this show. So we would really appreciate your patronage. So hopefully that thing is up and running and working by the time you hear this. There may be some kinks to kind of, work out on that. So we'll go from there. It is, the T-shirts are $15 plus shipping and handling, I believe. And you can choose your little... from a drop-down menu, you can choose your size and all that stuff. And it also works on mobile devices. So there's that. Okay. Let's just get started with this. Okay? Let's do this. Spoke with Damien. Let's see. Last week, he came over to Dining Room Studios here, and we had a real nice chat. And like I said, it does get the conversation gets a little serious. And I would like to say that his wife, Sarah... wonderful woman that helped set all this up, just had her little baby boy. And so congratulations to Damien and Sarah on becoming a family unit. So this song is Working Titles by Damien Jurado, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears with our chat with Damien. I hope you guys enjoy it. And boy, go to iTunes. Rate the show. It'd really help us out. Okay, we'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
You could use to be more like a hero, a darker shade of damage distortion, wearing death like a cape or a costume. Cut your ties and leave town when you want to, killing time till I pass through the chamber. Other room you keep my replacement. So fed up, still you're starving on paper. You're no him, but he's you, only better.
said this was over. I had questions that lead to more questions. Run a tie that will cut off my fingers. You wrote about me on every new record, and I'll show up in the title of your song. I only hope somebody requests it. What's it like for you in Washington? I've only seen photos of Washington. I'll never know. Leave me Manhattan, and I want the evergreen. Write me a song I can sing in my sleep. As sure as the rain that will fall where you stand, I want you and the skyline. These are my demands. What's it like for you in Washington? I've only seen photos of Washington. I'll never know.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to Dining Room Studios here in Greenwood, Seattle. And joining me here is Mr. Damian Jurado. Welcome, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming.
Yeah.
And you were saying you're actually leaving tomorrow for, is it a tour or, oh no, it's just for like a festival.
It's a festival, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Over in
Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina.
Cool. So you've been doing quite a bit of touring in support of this latest record.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I've been playing. I first started promoting the record just before February, so probably like early January.
Nice.
I did a press tour in Europe, and then played some shows in the States, and then I went right to Europe again. So,
man, you're busy.
Yeah, very, very busy.
Yeah, yeah, and you've got a kid on the way too.
Yeah, in a few days,
little boy in a few days. Yeah. And are you hoping to be back here to witness the birth?
I'm hoping he shows up when I'm here and not away.
Does that, because you're also a father of a 12-year-old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that daughter?
Boy.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So it'll be my second boy.
Yeah. So has it been hard for you to do tours like this?
not really. It's kind of both. I mean, some of the touring is, I don't know, I look at it now just as like, I have to do it, you know, and I don't know.
Right.
I see
like a job or something. I mean,
it is
like
a job.
Yeah, I mean, it is your job.
It's my job.
Yeah.
I mean, it's what I do, you know? So I don't like it. I mean, I don't like touring, but I mean, if I can go on a stage and play a show and knowing that I'm providing for my family, well then it changes the entire show for me.
Right. Right.
So that's kind of like my strengths. You know, I mean, trust me, there are many situations where you'll be in, like, you know, showing up in the middle of nowhere, lost in Italy or whatever, and then you just have those moments where you're just, like, in a foreign country or even in America, like, you know, nowhere, Omaha or, you know, part of Omaha or, you know, somewhere in Wyoming, and you're out of gas, and you just wonder to yourself, what the hell am I doing?
Uh-huh.
Happens all the time,
but
then you have to realize, like, I know why I'm doing it now, you know? I don't do music for me anymore like I used to. Uh-huh. I now do it for my children. So,
well, does it still, I mean, it, that's kind of a, I guess I've never heard that take on it before. Mm-hmm. Like, does it still give you joy to write these songs? I mean, where do the songs come from if it's not coming from
joy. I would never say I feel joy about writing the songs.
Uh-huh.
It's really weird. I'm actually not a typical artist. I'm one of those artists who is so removed from what he does. And I've always viewed songwriting as a function, like breathing or eating, you know, or sleeping. It's kind of how it is for me. It
just always came kind of natural to you?
It comes natural, and it's, you know, when the song shows up, which is quite often, mm-hmm. I'll entertain the idea, and then I'll do it, you know? But then at that point, it just becomes like a job. But to me, it's like if sleeping was your job or eating was your job, you know?
That would be the best job ever.
Yeah, it would be.
Took a bad sip of coffee there.
Yeah, it would be a great job, but I don't know. The reality is, I just don't do it for me anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. I'm probably one of the most like. I mean, but that doesn't mean to say like I'm not like
happy with what you're doing.
I'm very happy with what I do. I could look at. You know, I'm going to be looking at two kids very soon and the life I'll be providing for them based on playing guitar and singing. That's pretty incredible. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty awesome.
It's very, I wake up every day with that on my mind, you know, uh-huh. There's never a day where I don't think about that.
Right.
You
know? Right.
I'm going to be in situations where I don't like the situation, but I'm reminded that I'm very lucky and I'm blessed to be doing it. So
yeah, yeah.
But I don't really think I'm not like your normal musician. I don't think about my career ever. I don't think about the songs. I don't practice my songs ever. Uh-huh. You know, I'm the kind of artist that when I write a song, it'll just happen pretty fast, really. And then the tune and the melody usually comes at the same time, and then I write it out. Sing it out, do a quick demo of it on my, you know,
really?
Recording device, and then I'll leave it at that, and that's it.
No shit.
Yeah.
Huh.
So I never.
Because listening to your music, like I had the impression that, I always kind of thought of you as kind of a wordsmith. You know, because I always really enjoyed your lyrics.
Sure.
Even though, you know, sometimes I don't know exactly what you're singing about.
Sure.
But I have a hard time, like, remembering lyrics anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it always kind of seemed like a lot of thought was put into it. I mean, and I don't want to say that, like, you're not putting a lot of thought into it, of course, but...
But I'm not. That's the reality. I mean, the reality is I'm not. And for me, it's like, I don't know where it comes from. It's literally like, it would be almost like if you were possessed by some spirit, you know?
Yeah.
Songs... I mean, there are lyrics and lines that I sing in songs that I would never even say in real life. I would never, there are words that I would never use in real life in conversation or, you know, talking to myself or even writing a letter.
Well, how do you know these words then? Like, do you actively like look into a thesaurus if you need something to fit?
Or? No, the last word that I came into was the word emulous.
Emulous. What does that mean?
It means like, I think it means like shiny.
Oh, okay.
Or bright. And anyways, but I wrote it down and I thought it sounded cool. I mean, I knew that like people like, I knew people like, you know, Dylan and, you know, a lot of other artists I like a lot have used words that are made up or they're like weird kind of, you know, versions of the word. But this word, I didn't know what it was. It just kind of came to me and I wrote it down. And then after I liked the way it sounded, so I wasn't going to change it. And then after I did it, I asked a friend of mine, I said, what is emulous a word? And they're like, yeah, it means like shiny or bright, you know? So that's what I mean. It's almost like possession, you know?
Really?
It's like, yeah.
So let's start from the beginning here. When did you first like start doing this? When did you first pick up a guitar?
Jeez. Picked up my first guitar in 91.
91?
And then I didn't.
How old were you?
I was...
In 91.
I think I was 19.
Okay.
18 or 19. I think it was 18 at the time. I was 18. And then...
How'd you come about getting the guitar? Were your parents...
No. My
musical at all?
No. No, my family's musical. I was living in a house at the time... Not too far from here. I'm 130th.
Oh, okay.
In a house, and I was living with some friends of mine, and I had a song idea.
My something first song, that just kind of
popped out of nowhere, And a friend of mine said, you should try playing it. And I said, I don't know how to play guitar.
Yeah.
So he showed me some three chords that might fit the melody, and that was kind of it. But that was it. And I didn't touch the guitar again until 1995. Yeah. 1995, I didn't touch it again. Yeah.
Oh, shit. And then did you...
But I had ideas. I had stories in my brain, but I just, you know, but I wasn't writing them down, or I wasn't like doing anything with them.
Uh-huh.
I just sort of assumed that they were just my wild imagination.
Right.
And then, yeah. And then 95, I decided to get a guitar, borrow a guitar from a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And then I made two cassettes that had 30 songs on them each. I found out quickly I was prolific.
Damn. So was a lot of this stuff like stuff that you had been thinking about that 4-year period that like you weren't playing at all?
No, not really. It was just because in the beginning they weren't really story songs like they are now. Uh-huh. You know,
yeah.
They were just like snippets of things, and they were just songs that didn't really make sense. You know.
Yeah.
But I just kind of felt the need to do it, and so I did. You know, and I made two cassettes, and I played. My first show was at the Rendezvous in 96,
uh-huh.
Winter of 96. So yeah, it was just after the new year, 96. And then that was my first show, and I was approached by Sub Pop at that show. It was really weird. I mean, I was not looking for it.
You know?
I was not looking for it. So in some ways, it's almost like I'm an accidental musician, you know?
Yeah.
Which kind of makes sense to even now, like why I'm so far removed from it. Completely.
Well, what were you doing? What were you like back in like 91? What were you thinking? What like the path that you were gonna take? Did you have any idea?
No, like... I mean, I was a high school dropout, and I didn't know what my future, you know, was. I mean, at the place I was living in, I was even paying rent. I didn't have a job, nothing. Yeah, you know, yeah. I didn't know what I was gonna do. And. Also being special ed my entire life too had a big part of that, you know, like I didn't, you know, I was in a school system that basically moved you to the side, you know?
Right. Where did you grow up? Here in Seattle? Or?
I grew up kind of all over the US, never staying in one place for more than a year or two, but.
Your parents military or something? Or
in the beginning, but then they just couldn't decide what they wanted to do.
Really?
So then 1986, I moved to Seattle when I was like 12.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then I've been here ever since.
So. Yeah. You think that played a part into it? Like not knowing, like your parents sound like they didn't really know either. Or
I think a lot of it, I think it definitely played a huge part in my songwriting, mm-hmm. you know, later. I didn't know it was going to then, obviously, but I think it did now because, you know, I just write little short stories and put them in a song. They're just like snapshots. So.
Fictional, or are you drawing from personal experience?
No, it's all fictitious. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's cool, man. Mm-hmm. That's always what I used to, I haven't written any music for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually just because I just fail to pick up the guitar mm-hmm. for months and months at a time anymore. Mm-hmm. But like, that's what I would always try to do. But I don't know. I never thought I was very good at it. Like, are you ever hard on yourself when it comes to music, or do you just, you get an idea, you put it down on paper or record or record it at home and then send it off into the world? How do you work? Are there bad ideas, or are they all just ideas?
I don't know. I don't think about it. I mean, that's to be honest with you. I don't know. I mean, I don't look at it as bad ideas or good ideas. That's not up for me to decide. That's up for the audience to decide.
Okay.
I'm just writing it and putting it down. I mean, it's like.
So like everything you come up with, you're playing, you're bringing to.
I record it.
To the table.
I write it and I record it.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean it's going to be released. I mean, I had a talk with some of a friend last night who said, there are so many songs that you're doing nothing with that you do play live every once in a while, but you don't, you've never recorded. And there's hundreds of them I've never recorded. So
no shit.
Yeah. I just don't really, I don't know. It's not that I'm apathetic because I know I sound apathetic, but I'm not apathetic. It's just,
no, not at all. It just sounds like
I don't really, I just don't care. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I'm really glad that it's, I'm really glad I can provide for my family, and glad it's, it's been successful.
Yeah.
Because of my family, but you know, I'm not a house builder that goes and admires his houses.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm just not.
I think that, I think that's it's not that it's like a bad thing. It's just like, it's, you know, it's, what's the word I'm looking for? Uncommon, mm-hmm. You know, because most musicians that you meet, and myself included, and I wouldn't put myself in the same category as mm-hmm. a lot of musicians that I'm thinking about right now, but, you know, I would love to, like, you know, hear a song of mine on the radio, or like,
yeah,
you know, that was always the dream when I was a teenager.
Sure.
You know, be a rock star or mm-hmm. something like that. And mm-hmm. so that thought never crossed your mind.
No.
Huh.
No. I honestly, and I'm being honest when I say that, when I graduated high school, I mean, even at a young age, even middle school, I literally had no idea what I wanted to do.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you like to do at that age? What was going on in your life?
I mean, I liked music. I mean, I love music.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a big fan of, you know, I grew up listening to so many different kinds of bands, you know, but it wasn't really something that I aspired to be.
Right,
know?
Right.
I mean, you could like ice cream and not want to be an ice cream maker. That's kind of how it was for me. It's like, there were lots of bands I loved, you know, at a really young age.
Uh-huh.
And picking up a guitar, or, you know, even having daydreams about being a quote-unquote rock star or a well-known mm-hmm. musician was just not in my thing. You know, my childhood was just so dysfunctional that I'm not, there was never any time to focus. There wasn't any time to focus about, like,
is that from moving from place to place?
Yeah. It's like moving from place to place. My parents weren't like, you know, super awesome married couple, you know, I didn't know my extended family except for my grandmother, my mom's mom. I did, other than that. And like, I didn't know any of my family.
Yeah.
You know, I never met like uncles and aunts. I'd heard about them, never met them. But because I was moving around a lot, and I don't get attached to, I never got attached to people.
Right. Right.
I did. And then it would just be heartbreaking, you know?
Yeah. So you learned at a young age.
I learned at a young age to
totally detach
from things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. But I couldn't help it. I mean, I would,
no, that's,
I would attach to someone and then you'd face the heartbreak of moving away. But I knew you know, I knew that ahead of time.
Well, it's like a mental block, right? It's a mental block that gets built, you know, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
Because it's like saving yourself from the, from the pain of being torn away from
right.
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah. I get that. So, I mean, who were your influences at that time then? Like you said, you picked up, like, the first time you touched a guitar was 1991.
Uh-huh.
I mean, does your...
Well, I don't know. What do you mean by influence?
Like influences, like any, like, musician that you were listening to a lot or something like that. Were you drawing from anything like that? Or did just, I mean, this is just
no,
out of the blue.
No, because the music I was listening to at that point really... In that part of my life, it really was not of the folk genre,
right?
As of
right.
yet, right. This is early 1991, so mm-hmm.
yeah. So everything coming out of Seattle at that time was like
yeah. But then this is also like half a year before even Nevermind even hit the shelves,
right? You know? Right.
But so at that point, I guess when I say influence, I mean, when you say influence, there wasn't any like musical influence, because one, I wasn't playing music, but like was listening to a lot of music.
Right.
The
right.
music at the time I was listening to was a lot of like hardcore bands and like punk rock bands. But that, you know, that had zero to do with what I would later be doing.
Uh-huh.
I think what changed that though for me was that I got a Simon and Garfunkel record called Bookends, and that
yeah
it changed how I heard music forever. And oh yeah, and I think that was like my gateway to like the folk, you know, folky world.
Right, right.
You know, songwriting world. I mean, I grew up in the 70s, so I grew up with bullshit like James Taylor and Carly Simon and all that other, you know, horrible shit. But yeah. You know, I was, for some reason, you know, in the 70s, that was dominated on the radio. That's, you can go anywhere and you can hear, you know, whatever, Fire and Rain, you know.
Right, right.
Or Jackson Browne, you know. So.
Were you a big fan of Nick Drake?
No, I was not a fan of Nick Drake until probably around 2001.
Really?
Yeah. Someone gave me a Nick Drake record. Because
Pink Moon or Five Leaves Left or something like that.
They gave me the box set.
Oh, okay.
The complete box set.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually thought it was kind of boring, to be honest with you. I still think it's kind of boring. The comparisons I've gotten with him are, I don't see them, but other people.
Oh, if people compared you with him?
Yeah, the English press, like.
Oh, really?
Yeah. On certain records and whatever. But I didn't hear Nick Drake until like way later. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then when I did, I didn't think it was that big of a deal.
Man, I fell in love. I heard Pink Moon for the first time at a wedding when I was in high school. And I didn't know what it was.
Mm.
And I worked with the girl who was getting married. And so I had to kind of track her down after she came back from like her, you know, honeymoon or whatever, and ask her who that was. Mm. And so I was pretty obsessed with Nick Drake for a little while, and I don't know what it was. I think it was like just the way he kind of played a bass line and a melody at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, because he was detuned.
Yeah.
And I don't know how he did it, you know. And I've always, you know, tried to track down video of him and stuff like that when I was a little bit younger. But he was such a reclusive person, you know. But yeah, I loved that very simple, you know, almost like you say, it is kind of boring because all of his songs kind of follow the same trajectory.
Yeah. Like he's saying, it's basically, to me, it sounded like a long extended, like four albums of a Robert Frost poem.
Yeah.
You know what
a
I mean?
Little bit. Yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of what it was like. And
yeah,
it's like, it was basically shit that I didn't relate to.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't relate to, you know, bicycle rides in the country and golden leaves. I just don't, you know? So I had a hard time like connecting with it. I mean, that doesn't mean that I don't think he's brilliant. I think he's an amazing musician and a ridiculous guitar player and beautiful singer. But the songs I just didn't think were that awesome.
So let's get back to this high school thing. You said that you were in special ed?
Yep. I was in special ed from kindergarten up until high school.
Did you have a learning disability or?
Yeah. Well, I had a few disabilities, a few of them. I mean, learning was definitely one of them. I mean, that falls under the category. I mean, when I say many, I mean, I'm talking about like grammar, speech. I did speech therapy. Grammar was a huge one. To this day, I couldn't even recite my times tables. I don't know multiplication. I don't know division. I know nothing beyond addition and subtraction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know what even knows what most words are or mean, you know?
Yeah.
For the most part, I'm a horrible speller. Spell check is my friend pretty much.
Spell check is. Yeah. Yeah.
And the dictionary. And the thesaurus, which is really good.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, other than that, like, I don't, yeah, I didn't, yeah, I just was, I wasn't a normal student, apparently.
Anyway. Yeah. I wouldn't say that's not normal.
Well, normal,
I think a lot of people.
Normal in the fact that I didn't go to, you know, I wasn't on the football team or attended school, I didn't attend school dances or anything like that either.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. That's crazy though.
Yeah.
I mean, do you ever look back on those times and look at where you're at now and just go,
no,
it's pretty crazy.
I don't.
No,
no, I don't. Not really.
No,
no. I'm not really much of a ponderer.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people that just, I pretty much live in the now, you know,
it sounds like it.
I mean, but I don't ponder. I definitely like, or if, I mean, I reflect sometimes, but it's very rare, you mm-hmm. know. I'm one of those people, like, I don't regret anything I've done ever.
Yeah.
Bad or good or whatever. I just don't, because I think that they've made me all those decisions have made me who I am today.
Right, right.
You know. I'm a big believer in that. But no, I don't think about my past much, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because it wasn't that awesome, you know, to look at and think about.
Yeah.
So I pretty much just live in the now, you know.
Uh-huh.
So.
And how's the now treating you?
The now is good. Mm-hmm. The now is good.
That's a good place to live.
Though. Yeah, I mean, there's always. It's not going to be without, like, it's, you know, it's rough times, but it's okay.
Yeah. Right on, man. Well, hey, let's take our second musical break here. Okay. Do you have any suggestions for me here?
From the new record or older records or
whatever. What's one of your favorite songs to play?
Cloudy Shoes.
Cloudy Shoes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, this is Cloudy Shoes by Damian Jurado, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Stay with us. Welcome back. That was what album was that off of?
St. Bartlett.
That's off St. Mm-hmm. Bartlett. Joining us here in Dining Room Studios for the Air Raid Podcast is Mr. Damian Jurado. Once again, welcome back, sir. Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
And before we left for that musical break, we were kind of talking about your past and mm-hmm. You know, where you were at in your high school days and, mm-hmm. and how you picked up the guitar in 1991.
Mm-hmm.
And now you said something super interesting, that the first show you played at the Rendezvous Was it the Jewel Box Theater? Is yeah. that yeah? That's where all the yeah, all yeah. The venue is anyway.
Yeah.
You were seen by somebody at Sub Pop?
Mm. John Poneman, actually.
Who, really?
Yeah. President.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, what happened with that? What
he asked?
That was
for,
your first show.
Yeah.
And you played it just solo?
Yeah. He asked for a demo, and I said, I have two cassettes I just put out on my own for uh-huh. fun. I'm giving them for friends, but yeah, I'll give you them.
Yeah.
And that was really it, you know?
That was it. Mm-hmm. You were signed.
Pretty much. Yeah. within like 2 or 3 weeks, I was signed.
Yeah. Now, knowing that, you know, you kind of live in the now, you know, you kind of view your music and your mm-hmm. career in kind of a third person mm-hmm. stance. Not, I don't know if that's the right terminology for that, but you know, you look at it as this is your job. Mm-hmm. You're good at it, and you are providing for your family. I mean, at that point, did you look at that like, and were you excited about that at all? Well, I mean, that must have touched some sort of chord in you, right?
What do you mean?
Getting an offer from Sub Pop.
No, not really.
Really?
No, because you got to think about it. Like it wasn't something that I was looking for.
Right. Right.
It just happened, and I mean, I was very flattered, and I think I was shocked beyond anything else.
Right, right.
You know, I think originally in the beginning they signed me to be like, they liked the fact that I can be, you know, I could write a lot of songs. I was pretty prolific. Uh-huh. You know, I think they liked that, and so I gave them just shit tons of music.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have to go in and like re-record everything, or did they just take what you had already?
No. They signed me to a single first, and then I did the mm-hmm. single. And then I did the full length.
Uh-huh.
That was it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What was that experience like? I mean, was it much different from what you had been doing? Like, because you, at that
I'd
point...
I'd never been to a studio before. I mean, really? You know, I've never been in a recording studio. So, when I did the first single, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I've always said that, like, my entire career has been, like, a learning process.
Yeah.
I'm still learning, you know?
Uh-huh. Was it nerve-wracking at all, being in the room with people who had been...
It was only nerve-wracking because I didn't know what the hell I was doing.
Right, yeah. Right, yeah.
And they wanted me to do, like, take after take. And I was just like, I don't even see the point of doing take after take. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
I'm playing this exactly how I do in my living room, so I'm,
right, right.
I'm not sure what you want.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then the more takes I did, the more, like, sterile it got.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess that probably happens to everybody. Like, the more and more you play that same song over and over again.
Yeah.
Is that the same way you feel about, like, playing your music at shows, too? Or does having a band along with you, like, kind of help that through and, you know?
You know, it can. That's funny. I got this discussion last night with Josiah, actually, from the Head and the Heart.
Yeah, yeah.
I was talking to him about that, you know, because, you know, this is a band that's been... touring that first record almost 3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, how many times can you do Rivers and Roads until you're so sick of it? You can't take it.
What did he say?
He said, yeah, you know, we do get sick of those songs, but you just have to go to that place where you know, it's like, for him though, too, it was like, he said there are certain songs that he still gets excited every night to play,
uh-huh.
You know? I don't have those songs. Yeah, I wish I did. You know, I wish I did. I don't know. I just wish I had just had more of a connection
uh-huh.
to the songs.
Well, does it change at all? Does the feeling change when you get up on stage? Is that different? Like being up in front of a crowd or anything like that?
Not really, because, you know, I don't really pay attention that much to the audience, to uh-huh. be honest with you.
Yeah.
I'm talkative. I can be talkative. There are nights where I'm talkative, and there are some nights where I just shut down and I don't say anything. Mm-hmm. You know, it all depends on my mood at that point. You know, or how I'm feeling. But now the audience, I don't know. I usually just close my eyes and I don't really look at the audience, anyways.
Yeah.
So, I mean, because for me, mm-hmm. For me, it's just like acting. For
uh-huh.
me, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's one thing we were saying off air too. It's like, it's like you were saying that you may come off as kind of like stone. What were you saying about like when people come up to you like after a show or something,
yeah,
and talk to you about your music or something like that?
It feels like they're feels like they're addressing the character I play.
Right, right, right.
Who's not me?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I like that analogy.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one. So your music and playing your music has taken you to some pretty awesome places,
mm-hmm,
around the world.
Sure.
And you did say earlier when we first started that you're not totally into touring,
mm-hmm,
anymore. And you know, I get that totally. Being a family man now, like, you know, you got to pick up and leave your kids for a couple weeks or something like that. What's the longest tour that you go on now? And are you able to make that decision for yourself now?
I try to be gone no longer than 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
Why does it long? You know?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
a long time.
Yeah, totally.
But I used to do 6 weeks.
Really?
That was normal. I would do 6 weeks. I would do 6 weeks in Europe, and then I'd come home for 2 days and do 6 weeks in America.
No kidding.
That was normal.
Uh-huh.
And then finally, just like, I'm not doing this shit ever again. I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're killing yourself.
Right, right.
You know?
I mean, at that point, you're just, what, like, just totally sleep deprived?
Yeah, you just don't, it just gets to the point where just like, you know, it's like, you're killing yourself for, you know, but the money's great.
Right, right.
You know, you don't have a normal sleep pattern.
Uh-huh.
I still don't, you know, whether I'm not touring or not, but you don't have a normal sleep pattern. You know, your eating patterns are weird and you're in a different place every day,
uh-huh,
you know, and you're in uncomfortable positions and weird venues, but the money's great.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. I mean, trust me, I was discussing the other day with this girl, Alila Diane, who I played with at Bummer Shoot,
mm-hmm,
who's a great artist, by the way. Alila and I were talking about tour, and she said, you know, I basically told her the same thing what I told you, which is basically like, you end up in these places and situations, you're just like, you know, so, you know, no matter where you're at, you can be in Italy on a beach and it doesn't matter.
Right.
You are
right.
So detached from it because you're just like, I don't know where the hell I am. Nobody speaks English here.
Yeah.
But I'm supposed to be like playing the show and the money's great, but you just want to go home. And there are times where you're just like, man, right now I would totally trade in this guitar for a 9-to-5 job at blah, blah, blah.
Would you really though?
To be honest with you, there are many times where I've seriously given it consideration.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Because I'm not a person that handles change very well.
Uh-huh.
And then tour is a change every day.
Right, right. You've got nothing
there's
that's
no,
staying the same.
There's no stability.
It's so static, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think for once in my life, especially from my childhood, like I've been longing for stability.
Right, right. Yeah.
You know?
So when you get home,
I'm home.
You're just home.
I'm one of those people that just doesn't even go out of the house.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're my kind of guy, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's yeah. I find that really interesting.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, a lot of the times when you talk to like a younger musician, it's like, you know, you get the whole spectrum, right? Yeah. With the more musicians that I've been talking to, you get the whole spectrum of like the tour life. Like the younger musician is always at the point where it's like, yeah, we're having a great time. It's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, we stop in a town and we like Kyle Zantos, mm-hmm, your guitar player that
loves touring.
Yeah, he couldn't have said nicer things about touring, right? Mm-hmm. He always likes to go to guitar shops or pawn shops or, you know, and then get back to the bus and go play the show and onto the next town.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, the older people get and the more established they get, you know, with families back home and stuff like that, it totally, totally changes, everything. And I've heard that, Jack White even, I think he said this on Mark Maron's podcast, but that he only goes on tour, I think, for it's either 2 or 3 weeks at a time as well. Like, because just more than that, it's just, like you said, it's just killing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's really interesting that you say, like, going to a place like Italy, you're so detached from it because you're there to work, right? I mean, do you get to see any of the sights? Do you,
no.
You know, you really don't get to enjoy the beach or
no.
anything like that much at all, huh?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're looking at the beach through the eyes of a musician.
Right, right.
I'm not looking with my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
My eyes, you know, my eyes want to go home. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah. Yeah.
It's like you feel like you're in somebody else's body.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you don't want to. But you didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
But you have to be there. So that's kind of what it's like. Yeah. You know, it's like you're on call. Like it's go time. The cameras are rolling. Let's do this.
Uh-huh. Well, do you see? I mean, it kind of sounds like you're making it sound like you would much rather be doing something else. I mean, if you could be in a place where you could just make music, because you're good at it, you know how to do it, and not have to go on tour. Do you ever foresee like a day of that happening? Like where you could play maybe a couple shows, you know, here and there, but you wouldn't have to go on a long drawn out tour.
Mm. That'd be nice.
Is that in the future? Is that in the cards? Mm. Or is that even possible anymore?
It's possible, but I think I'd have to do something on the side.
Right, right.
Like I do fine art. I'm a fine artist as well. Uh-huh. I mentioned that to you.
Yeah.
Painting is for me is a huge. I love painting more than music.
Really?
Oh yeah. And so, yeah.
Is that? Are there any pictures of your paintings up on the web?
Oh, I'm sure they're floating around somewhere. Yeah.
You mind if I put one up for the blog post?
Yeah.
That'd be cool. Yeah.
Or have Sarah send you something.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be great. Yeah.
But painting's my passion. I mean, I know a lot of musicians are like that. McCartney's like that. I know Captain Beefheart was like that. You know? There's lots of musicians that paint.
Yeah,
you know, I think, and you know, passion. Their music was just secondary.
Mm-hmm. So is that your decompression then? Is coming home and painting?
Yeah.
Well, cool, man. I really appreciate you coming by and totally. Talking with me and having this good frank conversation. I really appreciate it. I appreciate your view on the music world and your own life and career.
Totally.
Yeah. So thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you.
We're going to close the show out today with, let's go with something off of Maricopa. Is it Maricopa or Maricopa?
Maricopa.
Maricopa. And that's a place, right?
It's actually a fictitional place.
It is?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was a real place.
No, no.
Oh man.
No, Maricopa.
What's it? Okay, what's it from?
Maricopa is a fictitional place. It's basically based on a dream I had about a musician.
Really?
Mm-hmm. He basically commits social suicide. He just decides that he doesn't want to play music anymore, and so he decides to leave everything behind.
Uh huh.
Like wakes up 6 o'clock in the morning. Gets in his car, doesn't take anything with him, no guitar, no ID, no nothing. He leaves everything in his house. He brings only his car keys.
And this is a dream that you had?
This is a dream I had. And he ends up in this place called Maricopa.
Weird.
Mm-hmm. The entire record is a concept record.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even realize that.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm thinking of like, what am I thinking of? Because I always thought, like, when I first heard the title to your album when it came out, I was like, Maricopa, maybe he's played there before.
Because
I was thinking, like...
In my mind, I have.
Apparently, yeah. Copacabana, maybe that's what I'm thinking of. I don't know.
Maricopa Cabana. Yeah, that's awesome.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, this is... let's see. We already played that one. Let's listen to Museum of Flight.
Okay.
We'll go with that one. And that's got a great video to it.
Thank you. Yeah.
As well that you can check out video, online.
Which also shows us broken down by the side of the road.
Oh, really? Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's one of the opening shots of the video. See, that's how glamorous tour is. So.
Right.
Being
right.
stuck on the Autobahn.
And where can we find out about more about tours and music coming out?
You can go to secretlycanadian.com, which is my record label that I'm on, or just damondrado.com.
All right. Perfect, man. Well, thank you once again for joining us here.
Yeah, man.
Really appreciate it. This is Museum of Flight by Damian Jurado off of the latest album, Maricopa. And this has been the Air Raid Podcast, episode 113. We will see you next week, everybody. Have a good one.